bodies. But no, he was more than that, even if his body wasn't.
I'm going to restore my corporeal self soon, he said.
Aijana let out a wheezing whimper, or a groan. It was difficult to tell. Then she took in a long, quivering breath.
I am your mother. I will be here for you whenever you need me. And when reality catches up to you, you'll be able to find me at the Black Moth.
The most squalid of the sordid boarding houses in Sanaya Square, of course. But Nikolai did not belong there. He would not.
Best of luck to you,
he said with a slight nod, and then he strode away. Chapter 21 Vika had run to the window of the Tsar's study as soon as the screaming had begun in Palace Square. She'd watched in horror as the jack exploded, followed by the boxes, with only the ballerina left behind. She shook as she surveyed the remains.
"Did you spare the doll, or is she supposed to be dead?"
she asked, as if Nikolai could hear. But what she really meant was,
"Is this what you intend to do to me? To us?"
Vika pressed herself against the windowpane and scanned the square for him. But if Nikolai was still there, she couldn't feel his magic. Perhaps it was his barrier shield, or perhaps he was already gone. Again, her heart contracted, locking itself, just in case. But the fact that Vika had to protect herself like that, that she had to watch as Nikolai turned against not only her and Pasha, but also against himself, hurt just as much as loving him. Vika shook her head grimly as she surveyed Nikolai's damage in the now empty square. She snapped her fingers, and the lifeless ballerina disappeared in a burst of tiny bubbles. Vika flourished her left hand, and the cobblestones assembled themselves back to their rightful places. But even as she swept magic across Palace Square, there were some things Vika could not do. Clear away the people's lingering fear, and the looming fog of her own. Chapter 22 It took much longer than Nikolai anticipated to reach the Zakrevsky house. If he'd been able to walk the streets like an ordinary person, it would have been a relatively short trip. But because a shadow without a person could not simply stroll out in the sunlight, not if he wanted to preserve the illusion that Vika was the only enchanter, and therefore to blame for the havoc wreaked upon St. Petersburg, Nikolai had to skulk under bridges and in the interstices of the canals. He nearly cried out in joy as he emerged from the darkness, onto the boulevard that ran along Yekaterinsky Canal. Never had he been so happy to see Galina's home. Three stories of neo-baroque excess, against which all the other houses on the street paled. How would Galina react when she saw him? Probably as if everything were the same, for Galina's heart was made of lead, and was therefore unsusceptible to any emotion, surprise or otherwise. But that would be a good thing. He needed a place from which he could plan his course of attack against Pasha. And unlike Aijana, Galina wouldn't constantly meddle in his affairs. Galina wouldn't care enough to exert the effort. Nikolai climbed the front steps and listened through the door. It did not seem as if anyone was inside, at least not in the entry. He charmed the lock open and slipped inside. Then he glanced quickly around him, and hearing the servants in the dining room, he tiptoed down the hall, up the curved staircase, and straight to his bedroom. It had been redecorated as a library. Nikolai stood immobile in the doorway.
"Where are all my things?"
He hadn't meant to say it so loudly, but well. Where in the devil were his desk and his bed and the armoire full of clothes he'd painstakingly tailored? He'd only been gone for 2 weeks. Galina glided down the hall behind him.
"I thought you were dead."
As Nikolai had expected, she was not rattled at all by his presence. He turned to face her. She didn't draw back.
"I'm clearly not dead," he said.
"You look a little dead."
"That's actually impossible for you to judge, for you can't even see me,"
I amend my earlier statement. You don't look particularly alive.
Nikolai sighed and rested his forehead on the doorframe.
Well, I am. And I have nowhere else to go. Because it's not exactly easy for a shadow to walk into an inn and ask for a room. Can I stay here?
It's a library, Nikolai. And the game is over. I am no longer your mentor, nor am I required to house you.
He pressed his head into the doorway for another moment before he stood up straight.
Right. Of course you'd say that. I don't know what I was thinking.
He turned back to the stairs. He would go down to the kitchen in the basement to Renata.
I'm sorry,
Galina said. Nikolai paused.
After my brother passed away, she said, I couldn't bear to have your things right here, inside my house, reminding me that you were gone as well. So I got rid of them. I did not expect you to come back.
Nikolai tilted his head at her.
Galina, do I detect a sentimental spot?
She cut him off with a scowl.
You still can't stay. Have you looked at yourself in the mirror? You'd frighten the servant to death.
Nikolai nearly laughed. He'd forgotten how stridently forthright Galina could be. But then he walked past his former mentor to the mirror that hung between paintings of proud Zakrevskis from the past. The mirror in which he'd always made one last check of his appearance before he left the house. Nikolai gasped at his reflection. He touched his face. He was all blur, his edges not quite defined, and the rest of him, a haze of charcoal grey. Like a storm cloud in boy form, he was just there enough that his finger did not pass straight through his cheek, but not quite there enough to be solid. Galina was reflected behind him. Her lips curled in what might have been an amused grin, if her mouth had known what to do with such an expression. But smiles were foreign to it, so she merely looked like a wolf surveying her supper.
It's not as if you haven't been a shadow before, she said.
True, but before his silhouette had only been a shroud, a deception created for the oath at Bolshebnoi Duplo, so that his opponent in the game, so that Vika, couldn't see him. But Nikolai had been himself beneath the shroud then. Now he was a shadow through and through. He dragged his finger along his jaw, as if that would make the line clear and sharp again, like it used to be. It didn't.
I need to see Renata, he said,
his voice as faint as his appearance. Renata would console and ground him. Galina turned up her nose.
She's not here. I fired her.
You what?
She disappeared in the middle of her work yesterday, leaving laundry unfolded and dishes to be cleaned. Intolerable.
Yesterday afternoon, she was with me in the step dream.
Nikolai grit his teeth as guilt pricked him.
Where is she now?
He asked.
I do not know, and I do not care. Are we done here? I'm glad you survived the game. It was interesting to see you again.
With that, Galina levitated, as was her wont. She never did like her feet to touch the floor for long, and floated past him, down the hall to her own rooms. She shut the door. This, as Aijana had predicted, was the moment when reality caught up to Nikolai. He had no one else to go to, no one else who wanted him. He didn't know where Renata was, and he couldn't face Vika, not after the way she'd looked at him when he'd animated Peter the Great, the horror and disappointment in her eyes. And an inn, as Aijana had pointed out, would not rent a room to a shadow. In the past, Nikolai could have spent a night or two at the Winter Palace. He temporarily warmed at the memory of the times he'd slept on the chaise longue in Pasha's antechamber. But the potent indignation that had appeared inside Nikolai as he escaped the step dream now reared its head again.
No,
he thought, as he stopped his reminiscing. The memories piled up against one another, like a caravan of carriages halted too suddenly. Nikolai clenched his jaw and ignored them.
I will not set foot in the palace again until it is mine.
Soon enough. But for now, there was nobody left. Only his mother. Nikolai watched himself in the mirror for another minute. His once proud shoulders slumped. Then he trudged down the stairs and out the front door. To the Black Moth. The only place, apparently, he belonged. Chapter 23 Aijana couldn't read the expression on Nikolai's shadow face, but she knew he did not want to be here. She looked around at the dingy room. Even at a boarding house as disreputable as this, a hooded woman who refused to show her face could rent only a room in the shack behind the decrepit inn's main building. And she saw the home she'd offered her son through his eyes. The straw mattress crawling with lice. The washbasin in the corner, cracked and stained brown and yellow-green by things better left unknown. The stench from the outhouse just outside their window.
"It is better than nothing," Aijana said. "I have my doubts," Nikolai said, turning for the door.
"Stay."
Why?
Because I want you to.
Nikolai hesitated. Did her love finally mean something to him? Or had he simply been forsaken by everyone else? Either way, hope bubbled inside her, like a mud pit in a sulfur spring. It was an awful thing to hope that her son's former friends and mentor had abandoned him, leaving Aijana as his last resort. But if that was the only way...
"It's not much," she said. "But at least you would have me, which, I realize, also isn't much. And if you have nowhere else to go..."
Nikolai pointed to the mattress.
"I won't sleep on that."
"This is the only place that will take me,"
Aijana said.
"I've tried."
She hunched over herself. Nikolai's resistance shriveled her black heart even more than it already was. All she wanted was to be close to her boy. Through 18 years of anti-death underground, that was all she'd wanted. And it held true even now. She watched as he shook his head and took in the room again, his disgust palpable. Should she tell him that it was actually she who'd given him the energy he needed to escape from the dream bench? Would that win him over? Or would he hate her more, because of where her power came from? He'd mentioned time and time again that he didn't want anything to do with her energy. But Aijana didn't have a chance to say anything before Nikolai spoke again. His tone now softened.
"I meant I won't abide this filth. I won't have you staying in quarters like this."
Nikolai snapped his fingers at the bed of lice, and it burst into an accelerated but contained fire, quickly burning itself to nothing. Then he snapped his fingers again, and two solid oak frames appeared. They were followed by a mattress and a heavy brocade blanket. He narrowed his eyes.
"Two mattresses, damn it," he muttered.
"What do you mean?"
Aijana asked.
"I meant to conjure two fine horsehair mattresses, not a single lumpy one."
He scowled at the bulge at the foot of the mattress. But the muddy bubbles in Aijana's soul simmered giddily. Her son had attempted to take care of her, and he'd conjured two bed frames.
"Does this mean you'll stay?"
Nikolai nodded and sank onto the edge of the mattressless bed frame, as if he were suddenly too tired to even be angry.
"Thank you for taking me in, even though I've been less than grateful."
"You owe me no apologies, my son. I am overjoyed you are here with me. And your magic. You have your power again."
Nikolai sagged as his silhouette flickered.
"Apparently not. Transforming the beds has taken much of the energy I have, and I didn't even do it right. I'm sorry, Mother. The second mattress will have to wait. And the washbasin. Perhaps tomorrow."
Aijana grinned with what remained of her teeth.
She couldn't care less about the wash basin. Nikolai was here, with her, and he'd called her Mother.
I challenged Pasha, he said. I intend to take the throne. But I'm a fool if I think I can beat him like this. He has Vika on his side.
Nikolai's shadow was fading, as well as losing its shape at its borders.
I would do anything in my power for you. I will help you overthrow Pasha.
Nikolai shook his head.
I don't want your help.
There it was again. Aijana sighed, but she pulled him to his feet and led him to the bed that had a mattress.
Rest,
she said, as she draped the blanket over him.
And do not worry about your magic. You can always glean more energy.
Nikolai yawned and nodded.
Right. I could always borrow more.
He sighed quietly and lowered himself onto his bed. Even with the fatigue, his movements were elegant, like the principal dancer in the Bolshoi Ballet lying down to slumber on stage. Or so Aijana imagined, for she'd never seen a ballet, but she had been a beautiful dancer too, when she was young and her body was new. Her son had the same rare grace she'd once possessed, probably more. Pride swelled in her putrefied chest. Nikolai fell asleep within seconds.
Poor dear,
Aijana thought. He had made it clear he did not want what she could offer, but Nikolai needed this energy, whether he wanted it or not. So she reached over and rested the pads of her fingers on the back of his neck, mindful to avoid grazing him with her claws. This way was not optimal. Nikolai could wake and throw Aijana across the room, or worse, cast her out into the street and never speak to her again. But this was her curse, condemned to trickery and sneaking in the night, even when it came to her own son.
But so be it, she thought,
for mothers will do whatever needs to be done. She poured energy into Nikolai until he shaded darker and his edges were less blurred again. He remained insubstantial. That was his curse for now. But he was more here than not. Here with Aijana.
I love you, Nikolai,
she whispered. Then she released him and kissed him on his forehead.
Sleep well. I shall return soon. I am going to have a little chat with your former mentor. One does not reject my son without consequence.
Chapter 24. In winter, Lazarevskoy Cemetery was a crowded plot of grey tombstones and statues and memorials, all covered in a heavy mantle of snow. Bare branches hung over the cemetery like outstretched claws. The old church of St. Lazarus loomed in the background, somber and severe, and a bit foreboding. Aijana snickered, her quiet laugh like twigs snapping. Lazarevskoy Cemetery was the kind of place in which she felt particularly at home. Galina floated over the snowy pathways until she stopped at a grave marked by a marble cross cascading with roses. Aijana hurried after her, her gait awkward in the uneven snow.
Do you have me where you want me?
Galina asked without turning around. Aijana froze where she was.
You followed me all the way from my house to my husband's grave,
Galina said.
So I ask again, do you have me where you want me?
She slowly turned around. Aijana expected Galina to recoil, as everyone did upon seeing Aijana's half-dead face. But Galina did not, perhaps because Aijana's hood still covered her, and the branches above filtered out the moonlight and made her features less conspicuous.
You're hideous, you know,
Galina said.
She can see me.
Aijana frowned. This was not the effect she'd been hoping for at all.
Well, let's have it then,
Galina said.
Who are you, and what do you want?
I am here to kill you.
Galina laughed, but it was the sound a wolf would make if it laughed, delighted and entangled with a snarl. It echoed through the cemetery, giving the effect of an entire pack of laughing wolves. Even Aijana shuddered.
"And why?"
Galena asked.
"Would you want to kill me? It's not that I believe you unjustified. I've affronted many during my lifetime. But I am curious what your particular reason is for hating me."
There were multiple answers to her question. Galena had bought Nikolai for the mere price of 4 animals, as if he were an animal himself, viewed him simply as a pawn in the game, failed to love him. But most important right now, Nikolai needed more energy, and since Galena was a mentor, her energy would be particularly valuable. It would carry with it the ability to use magic. If Aijana killed her, she could steal her energy and pass it on to Nikolai, and with the infusion of both Aijana's power and Galena's magical ability, Nikolai would be unstoppable. He would no longer have to worry about fading. He could crush Pasha and take the crown. Aijana bared her yellowed teeth in a smile.
"I am Nikolai's mother." Well, he certainly didn't get his looks from you, did he?
Aijana bristled, but she wouldn't take the bait. Galena was trying to distract her from her purpose.
"When Nikolai came to you today, asking for a place to stay, you tossed him onto the street without remorse."
Galena set her hands on her hips.
"And that, you believe, is an offense that merits my death? He had nowhere else to go. Nikolai is resourceful. You are heartless."
Galena sneered and looked pointedly at Aijana's chest.
"I would wager you are too, quite literally."
The black energy inside Aijana bubbled to boiling. She lunged at Galena. Galena jerked out of the way and flung out her arms, sending a wave of magic at Aijana. It hurled Aijana against a statue of a weeping angel and knocked the air out of her withered lungs. But she scrambled quickly to her feet. She had not managed to kill the Tsar by being weak. Galena might have a little magic on her side, but she was not skilled in combat. Aijana, on the other hand, had managed to defeat the soldiers who guarded the Tsar, as well as Alexander himself. And Alexander was no fool with a pistol or sword. Aijana charged, her blade-like fingernails flashing. Galena clapped her hands twice in rapid succession, and the tombstones in Aijana's path fell like dominoes in a death trap. Aijana darted out of the way of the first and second ones, but the third fell on the tail end of her cloak and tore it with a loud rip from her body, leaving her in only a threadbare Koilek tunic. And the fourth tombstone was more towering pillar than grave marker. Aijana barely escaped it crushing, and possibly severing, her bad foot. Galena was more formidable an opponent than she'd anticipated. It was one thing to be able to foresee the Tsar driving a sword through Aijana's belly, which she'd casually removed and then healed herself, much to Alexander's chagrin. But another thing entirely to fight someone whose skills allowed her to move unpredictably.
"I need to trap her. But how?"
The cemetery was too open, and Aijana would not be able to back Galena into a corner. Not when Galena had the ability to levitate and move faster in more directions than Aijana could.
"But what if Galena thought she had me cornered? Instead of me chasing her, she can chase me."
Aijana gasped and fell to the snow, clutching her foot as if the falling pillar had indeed wounded her. She cradled it in her hand, and, with a movement hidden from Galena's line of sight, snapped off one of the toes. It didn't matter. It was frostbitten, and Aijana couldn't feel it anyway. Besides, it was the foot that was already damaged. But she whimpered as if painfully injured.
"You broke my foot!"
she hissed, as she held the severed toe up in the air. She crawled up to standing, wincing and clutching the nearest cross for support. She hissed again at Galena.
You may have won tonight, but I will be back to repay you tenfold.
She began to limp away. Galena's laugh was a wolf's snarl.
If you think you can attack me and then simply walk away, you are sorely mistaken.
She stepped toward Aijana. Facing away from her, Aijana smirked.
Yes, follow me.
She limped as fast as she could toward a mausoleum, as if she were wounded prey seeking a hiding place from her predator. The doors were locked, but Aijana didn't need the key to get in. Her fingernails were as good for picking locks as they were for slashing throats. Galena closed the distance between them. Aijana slid her nails into the lock, and a few seconds later heard the satisfying click of the mechanism giving way. She shut the heavy mausoleum doors open and limped in, where it was completely dark. The faint moonlight outside did not penetrate the crypt. Aijana stumbled into the marble coffin at its center. There was a faint wisp of wind as Galena glided in.
I should lock you in here, Galena said, her voice echoing against the marble walls. You're mostly dead already. The tomb would finish the job. I survived being buried for nearly 2 decades. I doubt locking me in here would be enough to kill me this time, either.
Aijana said, partly because pride made her defend herself, and partly to draw Galena farther into the mausoleum, toward the sound of her voice. Galena was too cautious. She remained near the doors. But no matter. Aijana's eyes, being accustomed to living 6 feet underground, had already adjusted to the lack of light in the crypt. Especially with the faint moonlight in the background, she could see Galena's silhouette perfectly, and Galena could not see her. Aijana pounced. She lanced a nail straight into the center of Galena's chest, the needle tip of it spearing through pulsing, thick muscle. It turned out Galena did, in fact, have a heart, one bursting with energy like Aijana had never felt before, because Galena's energy was threaded through with the ability to call upon magic. It would be nowhere near as powerful as Nikolai's, of course, for Galena was merely a mentor. But the surge of it was still enough to make Aijana moan with pleasure, like absorbing fireworks along with Galena's life. This energy was what Nikolai needed. Galena gaped at Aijana.
You! I... what? You don't deserve Nikolai!
Aijana thrust her fingernail harder through Galena's heart. Galena cried out. A moment later, she slumped as the last of her energy drained from her haughty body into Aijana's blighted one. Aijana tried to extract her nail, as if she were withdrawing a sword, but the movement was too violent, and her nail snapped off, remaining firmly lodged in Galena's chest.
"Damn you," she said. "Even in death, you do harm to me and my family."
She spat on Galena's corpse, and then Aijana spat again for good measure.
You don't deserve Nikolai, either.
But there was someone who might deserve Nikolai, if she could prove her worth, her willingness to help him. It was the servant girl he'd mentioned. Aijana smiled. She would find Renata next. Chapter 25. The next afternoon, Vika rode beside Pasha in the open carriage as they departed the Winter Palace. Pasha might have been a wreck on the inside. He purposely averted his eyes from where the Jackson ballerina's boxes used to be in the square, but on the outside, he was nothing but regal serenity. He wore a crisp black military uniform with gold epaulets on his shoulders, red piping along the edges, and mirror-shined brass buttons down the front. His hair was neatly combed, This alone let Vika know that his appearance was but a facade, and a stately black feathered hat that marked his training in the cavalry.
I feel the same way,
Vika thought, composed on the outside, but a bundle of nerves on the inside. Yuliana had insisted that Vika could not appear by Pasha's side, wearing her favorite green dress. It was apparently
an out-of-date eyesore
that was
an affront to the Empire.
So now Vika wore a tightly corseted blue gown, as pale as Pasha's uniform was dark. The contrast, Yuliana had insisted, was necessary. Everything in how they presented themselves to the public had been calculated down to the last thread by the Grand Princess. Vika had actually suggested she conjure a dress, like the blizzard she wore to Pasha's birthday masquerade. But Yuliana had quickly squashed the idea. Vika was to demonstrate magic to the people, but not too much, or they would be frightened rather than reassured. However, Yuliana had approved the use of magic to keep the carriage unseasonably warm, which would negate the need for heavy overcoats, and better show off the outfits she had meticulously chosen. Vika had rolled her eyes. Their carriage arrived at the beginning of Nevsky Prospect, the very same boulevard where Vika had tamed the statue of Peter the Great. People already spilled out from shop fronts and leaned over their apartment balconies and windows, for word of the Cesarevich's procession had come well in advance of Pasha's arrival. But a collective gasp echoed along Nevsky Prospect as the citizens realized who else rode in the carriage beside their prince. Some of the windows slammed shut. Shouts sliced through the frigid air.
Witch! God have mercy upon us! Burn her!
I suppose Yuliana didn't announce that I'd be in the procession,
Vika muttered.
Sorry,
Pasha said. Of course he'd known, but from the crowd's reaction, Yuliana had probably been right to omit that part. Even Vika had to concede that. Pasha's guards slowed their horses. Gavril, the captain of the guard, shouted,
His Imperial Highness, the Cesarevich Pavel Alexandrovich Romanov!
The people, who would ordinarily fall to their knees and cheer for Pasha, remained eerily silent. Unfazed, at least outwardly, Pasha rose in the carriage, which now moved at a tortoise's pace. He offered his hand to Vika. She tilted her head in question.
Stand with me,
he said quietly. A soft smile reached his eyes. Vika hesitated, but the cuff tightened around her wrist.
This was what I wanted,
she reminded herself.
To be Imperial Enchanter. To be free to use my magic without limit or having to hide.
But was that what being Imperial Enchanter really was? Vika looked at the bracelet. It marked her accomplishment. It also shackled her to less freedom than she'd had before. She hadn't imagined that achieving her greatest desire would come true, but with the precise opposite of what she'd wanted, to fly without bounds.
Vika!
She slipped her gloved hand into Pasha's. Her breath caught at both the softness and steadiness of his fingers, and for a brief moment, she remembered the maple grove on Letney Isle, where they'd almost shared a kiss. Of course, it wasn't that she wanted that now. Far from it. But the memory was a sudden reminder of Pasha before the Tsar's death turned him and everything else horribly sideways. It was easier to take his hand when Vika remembered that he was just a boy, a golden-haired prince, but still, a real boy beneath the royal facade.
My dearest citizens,
Pasha said, his voice as bright and intoxicating as one of St. Petersburg's sunlit summer nights.
I know some of you have recently witnessed magic, which may seem unreal and frightening. I understand your fear, for evil can come from such power. But you have nothing to worry about, because magic has always been with us. Enchanters have existed throughout all of Russia's history. They have been quiet advisors to the Tsars and defenders of our empire. Today I have the honor and pleasure of introducing you to my Imperial Enchanter, Baroness Victoria Sergeyevna Andreeva. Although I hope she doesn't mind if I simply introduce her as Vika.
Vika.
Whispers of her name passed over hundreds of lips, like a haunted wind blowing through the boulevard. Vika shivered, despite the enchantment to keep the carriage warm.
There is no reason to fear her, or magic itself,
Pasha continued.
With Vika by my side, our empire is stronger against its enemies, and that will mean peace, prosperity, and happiness for all of you.
His grip on Vika's hand tightened. Vika did not squeeze back.
Who am I that I succumb so easily to a lie?
And yet it was what was necessary to restore calm. Being Imperial Enchanter, and being part of the machinery of the Tsardom, compromised Vika's natural compulsion to speak the brash truth. Her skin crawled, as if allergic to what she had to do.
I want to see the witch up close.
A little girl around 7 years old broke free of her mother and ran toward the carriage. Pasha's guard and their horses immediately closed ranks around the carriage. Her audacity reminded Vika of herself at that age.
Let the girl through, she said.
The guard looked to Pasha, who thought for a second, then nodded. The guard parted slowly, and Ilya slipped off his saddle to take the little girl by the hand. He led her to the carriage and motioned for the mother to follow. The woman trembled, paralyzed over what had just happened and what to do.
After all, Vika thought wryly, her child has just approached a very dangerous witch.
She'll be all right,
Pasha said loudly so the woman could hear. Then he leaned over the side of the carriage to be closer to the girl. The girl pointed at Vika.
What I want to know is, what if she does bad magic?
Vika's fingers twitched, a reflex of defiance, or perhaps defensiveness, yearning to prove everyone here wrong. She clutched her hands into fists to still them. The crowd listened intently, as if their fates were in the hands of this little girl's words. They held their breaths for Pasha's response. He shook his head solemnly.
Vika won't do any bad magic, but you are a very brave and perceptive girl to ask. What's your name?
Lena.
The girl peered at Vika like an exotic animal in a circus cage, menacing but fascinating all the same.
How do you know for sure she won't be bad?
Lena asked Pasha.
Mama said Vika is a hag riding the devil's broom into St. Petersburg.
Vika crossed her arms, hands still balled into fists.
I'm not a hag.
Lena took her in from head to toe, then toe to head.
No,
she said, after she'd finished her assessment.
You're very pretty, but it could be a trick to make us like you better.
Pasha cleared his throat. Vika bent down and stretched out her left arm toward Lena.
Well, even if it was a trick, I wouldn't be able to be bad, because of this.
Her stomach curdled as she took off her glove and revealed the gold bracelet circling her wrist.
I am bound to serve the good of the Russian Empire. The cuff will burn me if I do anything against His Imperial Highness's commands.
Lena's mouth dropped open. She reached a pudgy hand toward the bracelet.
Lena, no!
Her mother shouted. Lena didn't withdraw her hand, but stopped short of the cuff.
It's all right,
Vika said.
You can touch it. It only gets hot if I'm naughty.
Lena glanced at her mother, who still stood trembling on the side of the boulevard. Then the girl giggled as if she'd just discovered how free she was to do whatever she wanted in the moment. And she ran her little fingers over the bracelet's gold vines. She petted the feathers of the double-headed eagle. After a minute, she looked up at Vika again.
But what about the statue that went mad, and the exploding boxes near the Winter Palace.
Those were mistakes, Vika said as she tugged her glove back on. Pasha raised his brows quizzically.
Trust me, she mouthed.
Vika wanted to keep Nikolai's current, tainted existence a secret. Then, when she figured out what was wrong with him, he could return as a beloved prince. It was better this way for Nikolai and for Russia, and selfishly for Vika too. If the people feared and hated Nikolai, Yuliana would have a stronger argument for executing him. But if Vika could protect Nikolai until she was able to save him from himself... She didn't want to explain all that to Pasha, though. And even if she did, now was not the time.
Trust me, she mouthed again.
Pasha's brow stayed up, but he nodded slowly. Lena huffed, reminding them she was there.
Prove it,
she said. Vika frowned.
Prove what?
That you're nice, not naughty.
Vika glanced at Pasha. He nodded. It was time for the Christmas tree. She opened the door to the carriage to step out. Ilya was quickly there to offer his assistance.
Thank you,
she said. His eyes lingered upon her a few moments longer than necessary. The way he looked at Vika was not the admiring gaze of a young man, however, but rather an appraisal, an assessment of good and evil, similar to Lena's. Interesting. Vika tucked away the observation to consider later. She walked away from the carriage. Lena began to follow, but Vika looked back at her and shook her head. Pasha invited Lena into the carriage instead, and from the way Lena beamed as she sat beside him, it was obvious Pasha had won over another adoring admirer for life.
He doesn't need magic, Vika thought. Pasha is his own quiet force to be reckoned with. He just doesn't entirely know it.
Vika walked a few more blocks from where the initial crowd had gathered. Here, too, there were people along Nevsky Prospect, but they were fewer and farther between, and they shifted away to give her a wide berth when she stopped in the center of the boulevard. Vika closed her eyes, and with Nevsky Prospect quiet, focus came rather easily, even though the stability of the city hinged upon her performance. She pictured the fir tree that grew outside her cottage, and the thought of home made her smile, despite the circumstances. She and father used to decorate it every year, dressing its lopsided branches with golden beads and wooden ornaments, and Vika's favorite, moths she enchanted to flutter around it with glowing wings. She'd heard, as a child, of lightning bugs in warmer climes, so she'd worked with what she had here in Russia to create her own sort of fireflies. When Vika opened her eyes, what seemed like stars on a string appeared in the sky. They twinkled brightly, even though it wasn't night. As they drew near, their forms came into view. Moths with lighted wings, carrying a twig from her fir tree. They dropped the thin branch into Vika's waiting hand.
Spasiba,
she thanked them. They bobbed in the air for a second, then flew to the rooftop of the nearest building, landing to rest after their speedy flight from Ovchinin Island. Vika examined the twig the moths had brought. The wood was healthy and strong, the leaves full and dark green. She brought it to her nose and inhaled. There was possibly nothing better than the smell of Christmas. Hopefully the people of St. Petersburg would think so too.
Let's make you into a tree, shall we?
She knelt and set the twig on the ground. She rubbed her gloves together and flung her hands apart. The twig seemed to explode as it burst from one small branch into thousands of enormous ones. The crowd gasped, and the force of the twig's instantaneous growth pushed even Vika backward. The tree trunk kept expanding and expanding until it was several feet across, and the treetop reached at least 100 feet high. Vika's smile broadened, amplified by the heady perfume of fir mingled with sap and snow.
And now for decorations.
Vika clapped her hands, and immediately, lacy garlands of pale blue flowers, blue mist sage, one of her father's favorites, appeared and draped themselves around the tree. Chunks of ice creaked and leaped up from the nearby, then melted until they formed themselves into glistening crystalline orbs, hanging like ornaments from the branches. The moths resting on the palace rooftop flew back toward her and fluttered their wings impatiently. Vika nodded. They zipped through the air to the tree. As they did so, even more glowing moths flew in from all around the city, lighting the sky. They wove in and out of the branches, swooping up and down. Magic. Glimmering tinsel. Vika looked around at the people on the boulevard. The crowd was much closer now. Most of their eyes didn't glisten with fear anymore, either, but with the wide-eyed curiosity Lena had earlier displayed. But Vika wasn't finished. She still needed to charm the tree to give gifts to children who approached it. What could the tree give? If this were Nikolai's enchantment, he could conjure intricately wrapped presents, each with a different toy, a kit for building model bridges, a wind-up doll, a music box that played Christmas songs. But that wasn't the sort of magic Vika excelled at. She was better with the elements and nature. But a child like Lena wouldn't be happy with a box full of snow. There was, however, food. It would be tricky, because food conjured from magic was never, as Father had claimed, as delicious as that cooked by hand.
But what child was ever picky about candy?
Vika snapped her fingers, and deep violet sugar plums appeared all over the tree, hanging by black licorice stems. The lower boughs of the tree grew heavy with enormous candy pine cones, each a different color and flavor, from strawberry red to marmalade orange to honeysuckle berry blue. And tufts of white cotton candy, like sweet snow, floated down onto the branches. Wherever a child could reach, a treat could be found. Vika stepped back to survey her tree. It was impressive and lustrous, and above all, innocent. She couldn't use something this pure as a weapon, and she wasn't going to kill Nikolai anyway.
"I'll give it fire," Vika thought, "but not as Yuliana wanted."
Vika conjured a small flame at her fingertips and blew on it. It flew to the base of the tree and wended its way to the center of the trunk. From there, it began to light the tree from within, fiery and hot. The flame burned in the trunk, but remained contained inside the thick layers of bark, and it shot up, up, up through the middle. The fire destroyed the tree's soul, and at the same time fueled it, imparting the wood itself with light and life from the inside out. Finally, the flame reached the very top of the tree and exploded forth, flickering fiercely into the sky. Lena cried out and clapped her little hands together. But Vika didn't celebrate. She looked at her enchantment and saw herself, and Pasha and Nikolai.
"It's only a question of whether our bark will hold, or whether the fire will eventually consume and kill us all."
The rest of the people on Nevsky Prospect remained quiet and still. They no longer shouted about witches and devils, but they also didn't clap or cheer. It was as if they understood how precarious everything was, and that darkness could not be deterred by a single fiery Christmas tree, or a single fiery girl. Chapter 26 Yuliana's antechamber was littered with paper. Several boxes of her mother's correspondence were upended across the floor, the remnants of the late Tsarina's floral perfume haunting the room like a ghost. Yuliana's own notes cluttered the small desk in the corner, displacing the stack of Imperial Council reports, which stood so tall on the floor that it was nearly impossible to see her sitting cross-legged on the rug behind them. She was combing through her mother's letters. Well, the ones that were sent to the Tsarina, since Yuliana obviously didn't have the ones her mother had sent out, and looking for mentions of Alexis Okotnikov, as well as anyone else who would have been the Tsarina's lover nearly 18 years ago. Her mother had often felt isolated in court life, and hence was an incessant letter writer, finding solace in news from her friends. The problem, however, was that her mother's friends had also been incessant letter writers, which meant there were thousands of envelopes to go through.
But there must be something in here that either proves the Tsar was Pasha's father, or that he wasn't.
Already Yuliana had found a few letters from noblewomen, reporting to the Tsarina on seeing Okopnikov at this or that ball, in this or that parlor, and what he wore that night, with whom he danced, if he complimented anyone for their piano playing. There were mentions, too, in earlier letters of other men, possible lovers. Yuliana sighed. She didn't know if she wanted to grow up. Court life for women seemed so terribly predictable and dull. At least if Pasha became Tsar, he'd let Yuliana help. He understood that she was more Catherine the Great than Marie Antoinette. Although Yuliana did have an appreciation for petit four and beautiful gowns. She laughed, something she only allowed herself rarely, even when alone. Then she bent over a new pile of letters, even though her neck ached from the hours of reading before.
"I will solve this," she said,
as she opened another envelope.
"One way or another."
Chapter 27.
"Can you make room for my mother?"
a boy asked that evening, as he pushed his way into the mass of people in the nave, the church's main room. He neared Pasha, who stood in the center of the crowd, disguised as a dock worker. Behind the boy trailed a woman with a gray shawl wrapped around her head, her posture stooped and her footsteps halting. She was probably no older than 30. But life was hard on ordinary Russians, the ones who swept streets and labored in factories and raised a half-dozen children before they died of cholera or consumption or simply exhaustion. The rest of the worshippers wore similar expressions, weary and resigned, as they stood in the nave awaiting the liturgy.
"Make way!"
Pasha said, parting the crowd with his arms. The boy and his mother nodded gratefully. The church was a simple one on the outside, nothing much to look at compared to the grand cathedrals in other parts of St. Petersburg. But those were churches for the moneyed. This was a place of worship and shelter for everyone else. And yet intricate gilded icons of the Holy Trinity and saints throughout history adorned their iconostasis, a wall-like screen that divided the nave from the altar, and up above, the ceilings were painted with holy scenes. No expense was spared when it came to honoring the Lord. Pasha settled back into the crowd. He wore a plain tunic and trousers, as well as a false beard to cover most of his face. But it didn't matter much, for everyone was too busy whispering their own prayers to look at those around them.
"Please save the Cesarevich from the devil's magic. Have mercy and spare us from the witch. Tell us what to do, O Lord. Send a sign, and we will follow."
The nave seemed to grow smaller. The curdled smell of fear lay like a heavy blanket in the church, and it was harder and harder for Pasha to breathe. He wove through the masses, but everywhere he turned, they whispered the same entreaties.
"Help us! Rid the city of the witch! Exorcise the demon from the Cesarevich!"
It seemed Vika's tree and Pasha's entreaties to the city to believe in him had not convinced everybody, not even close. He strode out of the nave and burst out through the doors of the church. The frigid air outside rushed into his lungs, and he gulped it down in ragged breaths. Had he made a mistake in endorsing magic? There was a reason the Tsars and the church had hidden it in the past. Most people could not handle that there were powers larger than they are. Now, however, they knew about magic again, and things were spinning out of control.
"I don't know how to do this,"
Pasha thought, as he leaned back, head tilted against the chilly church walls. The wind bit into his cheeks, stinging him with sharp needles of sleet.
"I don't know how to be Tsar."
Chapter 28. After Galina fired her, Renata had scrambled to find work. It was only through the connection of another girl who'd worked at Ludmila's temporary St. Petersburg kiosk last fall that she secured a position at Madame Boulangère, the Parisian-style bakery on Nevsky Prospect. It wasn't a glorious job, although no bakery job could ever be called such. The air was always sweltering from the constant heat of the ovens. The hours were grueling, and the owner of the shop, the so-called Madame Boulangère herself, had lost her taste buds in a childhood accident, but refused to acknowledge it, and thus complained constantly of the lack of flavor in the store's pastries, when any lack thereof was the fault of her own tongue. Still, it was employment. Besides, Renata had weathered much worse working under Galina all those years. A tasteless proprietor was nothing remarkable to bear. Renata was often the last at the bakery, for she was also the newest employee, and thus had the dubious honor of cleaning the shop. She was about to light more lamps. It was only early evening, but the sun set by late afternoon in the winter in St. Petersburg, when the front door opened and closed again.
Hello?
She called into the near dark. She thought she'd locked the door. Perhaps Inessa, the girl who'd helped her secure the job, had come in to help. Although Renata had no idea why anyone would volunteer to do so.
Renata Galegina, I've wanted to meet you,
a raspy voice said. Definitely not Inessa. Renata backed up behind the bakery counter.
I'm sorry. We're closed for the evening.
She looked around for a knife, a spatula, anything with which to defend herself. But either the girls had tidied up too well during the previous shift, or there wasn't enough light in the shop for Renata to see, or both.
Do not be afraid, my dear. I mean no harm. I am Nikolai's mother, Aijana Karimova. I am here to ask for your assistance with my son.
Aijana did not advance, but rather remained near the entrance of the bakery.
Nikolai's gone,
Renata said. She had returned to the step bench after he'd wiped most of it away, but she hadn't found him there again. She hadn't worried, though. If he could survive the game, he must have survived the bench. But she wouldn't tell this stranger of a woman any of it. Not until she knew for certain who she was. Renata wrapped her fingers around a rolling pin. Finally, some measure of defense.
On the contrary, Aijana said, he's come back.
He's come back. So she does know that he's alive, but was elsewhere for a while. How do I know you're telling the truth?
Renata asked.
It's your choice whether you believe me or not,
Aijana laughed.
After Nikolai escaped the bench, he went to his old home to seek shelter and to find you. His former mentor turned him out, and you had been relieved of your duties there. Since then, he has been, shall we say, preoccupied. But I know he would like to see you again.
And then Aijana proceeded to tell Renata about Nikolai's challenge to Pasha. Renata dropped the rolling pin on the counter. It clattered and fell onto the floor.
Nikolai threatened to destroy Pasha and take away the throne.
That didn't sound like the Nikolai she knew at all.
You will assist him,
Aijana said.
I beg your pardon?
I am not asking you. I am telling you.
Aijana began to limp toward the bakery counter. She crossed into a sliver of light cast from the street lamp outside, and Renata saw her skeletal face and the patches of long, greasy hair.
What are you?
Aijana paused.
I am a faith healer. A woman who clawed her way back from anti-death. A mother who cares for nothing else in the world but her son. Nikolai needs energy, Renata. He may have returned to reality, but his hold on this life is tenuous. If he is to have a chance of defeating the Cesarevich, Nikolai will need more energy soon.
How am I the answer?